Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. And I'm your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. 2021 NFL Draft Day 1 officially in the books, just wrapped up. An exciting draft, as always. I was so hyped. I was so psyched about this draft. Showing my DMV roots right there. I was psyched about this draft. I took off work for this draft. I consider the NFL draft to be like Christmas. Christmas to me comes on April 29th. Y'all can have December 25th. You know, Jesus might not have died on April 29th, but today was Christmas for me. Now, to some people, that might be blasphemous, but to me, that's just a pretty good line, so I had to say it. April 29th, 2021, day one in the NFL draft, the most wonderful time of the year. The draft is the foundation of your football team. You build the team from the inside out through your draft. Of course, you got trades and free agency, but the heart and soul of your football team is always going to be in the NFL draft. Dynasties have been built throughout the years, throughout history in the NFL draft. You think about the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 1970s, Terry Bradshaw, Mean Joe Green, Mel Blunt, L.C. Greenwood, Jack Lambert, Jack Ham, Franco Harris. All those guys are draft picks. John Stallworth, Lynn Swan, all draft picks. And Pittsburgh was able to use all those guys to win four championships in one decade. You think about the San Francisco 49ers in the 1980s and the dominance they had throughout the entire decade. Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott, the three best players in the team. All three of those guys were draft picks by the San Francisco 49ers. In 79, it took Joe Montana. In 81, it took Ronnie Lott. In 85, it took Jerry Rice. And, of course, the rest is history. You get arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, in my opinion, the second greatest quarterback of all time in Joe Montana. You get a Hall of Fame, 10-time All-Pro DB. And Ronnie Lott, and in 85, you get the greatest wide receiver of all time in Jerry Rice, and you win four championships as a result in that decade. Of course, you think about the Dallas Cowboys in the 1990s and the way their dynasty was built. You got to go back to 1989 when Jimmy Johnson engineered that legendary trade of sending Herschel Walker to the Minnesota Vikings and getting an abundance of draft picks back in return. He was able to use those draft picks to get guys like Emmitt Smith, Nate Newton, Russell Maryland, Darren Woodson, so on and so forth. And you can bring it back to modern times. You can think about our defending Super Bowl champion, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The heartbeat, the core of their football team was built through the NFL draft. Mike Evans is a draft pick. Chris Godwin's a draft pick. Levante David, Devin White, draft picks. You think about Tristan Wirfs, their first-round draft pick a year ago, right tackle, how outstanding he was in his rookie season protecting Tom Brady and anchoring that Tampa Bay offensive line. All those guys are draft picks. The core of your football team, you build championship football teams in the NFL draft. That's why this is so vital, so important, so necessary. That's why as a football nerd, I look forward to this so much every year. That's why I consider this to be my personal Christmas. Because as a football nerd, I get to nerd out and just watch all these college football players I've watched and studied come to the NFL and get selected by whatever team drafting them, whoever needed them. To seeing the entire draft process going from the college football season to the Senior Bowl to the practice before the Senior Bowl to, you know, the combine. Of course, there wasn't a combine this year because of the pandemic, but then you had pro days and you had the daily scrutiny that goes on leading up to the draft. I told somebody the other day at work, players, for whatever reason, in the whole draft process get worse the longer the draft process is. So from the last game you played in your college football season up until the actual draft, you all of a sudden become a worse football player because nerds like me sit around and watch tape all day and figure out everything that you do wrong. You know, if I'm evaluating a quarterback, the more tape on him I watch, the more inaccurate he becomes to me. The more I don't like his footwork. I don't like his anticipation. I don't like some of the throws he made. I look at some of the games he had that were less than standard, some of the bad games that he had. So same thing with a running back. I look at his change of direction. I look at his inability to hit a hole. All of a sudden, all these things start standing out more and more on tape. A safety doesn't like to play the run, doesn't like to tackle, isn't as physical as you thought he was. It all comes to light on tape, the more tape that you watch. And everyone just gets worse and worse and worse leading up to the draft. So it's nice to finally have the draft come around so we can just watch the draft and appreciate it and just see where these guys end up. Before the draft even happened this year, though, we got to talk about the first big piece of news that came out in the NFL today. That, of course, coming out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, where legendary first ballot NFL Hall of Famer MVP quarterback Aaron Rodgers announced today, or came out in the news anyway, that he no longer wants to be in Green Bay. Apparently the quarterback is frustrated and upset with the direction of the football team. Still pissed off about what happened last year when the Green Bay Packers traded up into the first round to take Jordan Love, a quarterback out of Utah State, knowing that the Green Bay Packers needed some more weapons on offense, needed to further solidify their defense. They decided to trade up in last year's draft to get yet another quarterback. This highly upset Aaron Rodgers, pissed him off, motivated him to have the MVP season he had a year ago. And apparently time does not heal all wounds. Aaron Rodgers, a year later, is still pissed off and upset about this, still in his feelings, still feeling a certain type of way about the Green Bay Packers taking a quarterback last season. So it came out today that he was demanding a trade, open to leaving the Green Bay Packers, didn't want to re-sign, didn't want to renew his contract. That obviously is major news on so many levels. First of all, like I said, Aaron Rodgers is your defending league MVP. He is in the discussion for best quarterback in pro football. You can say Rodgers, you can say Patrick Mahomes. Personally, I say Mahomes, but you can say Rodgers, and I won't be upset about that. But this is a guy, you know, he's getting up in age now. He's in his late 30s. He's pushing 40, and that doesn't really mean a whole lot for NFL quarterbacks. You look at Brady, who's 43. Breeze played, so he's about 41. Roethlisberger's in his late 30s, so is Matt Ryan. Phillip Rivers played, so he's about 40. You know, quarterbacks in today's NFL can play for a long time, but their championship window doesn't stay open forever. Even though Green Bay has made it to consecutive NFC championship games, they lost in back-to-back years for clear-cut reasons. Some of that's Aaron Rodgers. He didn't play that well against San Francisco in 2019, and there were some plays he left on the field in 2020 NFC title game at home versus Tampa. But there's some other issues on the team that never get addressed. Green Bay, for whatever reason, never goes offensive playmaker at the skill position in the first round. They've drafted defense the past couple years for the most part. And Aaron Rodgers, whether it be right or wrong, is upset about that. He's looking for more help on offense. He's looking for someone opposite Devontae Adams. He's looking for another target, another weapon that you can throw the football to. He's looking to extend that championship window. He's looking to compete with Tom Brady. And don't think Tom Brady going to Tampa Bay and having so much influence and control over that organization doesn't have an effect on Aaron Rodgers. It has an effect on every quarterback in the league. Other quarterbacks looking at Brady and the way he was given the keys to the car in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and honestly probably being jealous about it, looking at it and saying, well, if he can do that, I can go do the same thing either here or somewhere else. Tampa Bay pretty much turned over their entire football team to Tom Brady. That's why Rob Gronkowski was brought in. That's why Antonio Brown was brought in. That's why Leonard Fournette was brought in and re-signed. Those are Tom Brady guys. He advocated for those guys. So he has input and say over his football team. But Aaron Rodgers is looking up in Green Bay, looking down in Tampa and saying, where's my input? Where's my say? I've carried this football team for over a decade. I'm arguably the greatest quarterback in franchise history. I'm a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm league MVP. I'm Aaron fucking Rodgers. How come I don't get input over my organization? How come when I speak, y'all don't listen to me? How come you don't go get me some more weapons? How come I can't bring in my guys? So I understand the frustration. Aaron Rodgers is looking to go somewhere and win a championship. He realizes the window is closing, the clock is ticking, you're getting up in age. You only have one championship on your resume. Meanwhile, Tom Brady's 43 and keeps winning. He has seven, and he just beat you in the NFC championship game to go win his seventh championship in the Super Bowl 2 weeks after. Other quarterbacks are watching, and other quarterbacks are jealous and disgruntled and pissed off about the situation. They want total control over their football team the same way Tom Brady has. They want their input to be shared and acknowledged the same way Tom Brady's input is acknowledged. And Aaron Rodgers is not getting that in Green Bay. So from his perspective, he can just do the same thing that Brady did. If Brady wasn't going to be acknowledged and valued in New England, because let's face it, as great as Brady is, the buck stops with Bill Belichick in New England. Belichick has final say over everything that happens with that team. So Brady acknowledged that, so he went somewhere else where they gave him complete control over the team. So Rodgers is looking at that saying, well, if you're not going to listen to me here in Green Bay, you're not going to give me what I want here, fuck it. I'll just go somewhere else where they'll be glad to have me, because whatever team I want to go to is struggling and in dire need of a great quarterback to put them over the top, to get them over the hump. So I'll go there, and they'll listen to me and whatever demands I might have. whether it be San Francisco, as was the rumor first and foremost, and the first thing that popped in my head as a 49er fan, and it came out, John Lynch confirmed it today, that there was conversation between San Francisco and Green Bay in regards to bringing in Aaron Rodgers. The deal that was being talked about that I was reading about earlier was San Francisco was going to send a third pick in the NFL draft, Jimmy Garoppolo, an additional compensation to the Green Bay Packers in exchange for Aaron Rodgers. I can't lie. I mean, there is no lying here on the Dion Gordon podcast. Once again, the purveyor of authenticity. I was totally 1,000% in favor of that deal. Are you fucking kidding me? We can get Aaron Rodgers. You can have that third pick. You definitely can have Garoppolo. I don't give a fuck about Garoppolo. Aaron Rodgers in San Francisco with the weapons that we have, with Deebo Samuel, with George Kittle, with Brandon Ayuk, with the running game being what it is, with Shanahan calling plays, Aaron Rodgers is already running the same offense in Green Bay. LaFleur is running the Shanahan offense, Mike LaFleur. His brother was the passing game coordinator in San Francisco. Now, Matt LaFleur is the coach in Green Bay. Mike LaFleur was the former passing game coordinator in San Francisco. Now he's with the Jets as their offensive coordinator, but the point I'm making is it's the exact same offense, same concept, same everything. So Rodgers is already comfortable with it. So it would have been, to me, it would have been a seamless transition, and it definitely would have put San Francisco over the hump and pretty much guaranteed us a spot in the Super Bowl next season. It didn't happen. I don't really think it was going to happen. It was just wishful thinking on my behalf as a Niner fan. I was hoping it would happen. I was hoping to speak it into existence, but I didn't think it was going to happen. Green Bay did not make a move yet. As of right now, Aaron Rodgers is still with the Green Bay Packers, whether he likes it or not. And that's just what it is. Now, there's talk about him going to Denver. I think that would be a great deal for them. That would definitely put them over the hump. They have a litany of talent in Denver on the offensive side, on both sides of the football, really. Denver is just missing a quarterback because you have Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy and Noah Fant and Phillip Lindsay in the backfield. The jury is still out on Drew Locke. There was some conversation going into this draft as to whether or not Denver was going to select the quarterback because they're not 100% happy or in love with Drew Locke and, you know, completely enamored with him being their quarterback. So I can see Denver being a landing spot for Aaron Rodgers, and that would definitely be a significant upgrade for that football team. But once again, as of right now, currently, Aaron Rodgers begrudgingly is still a member of the Green Bay Packers. But that was the first big news of the day before the draft. That's the great thing about the NFL, as I've spoken before about on this podcast. There really is no such thing as an offseason in the NFL. It is a 24/7, 365, 7 days a week, round the clock deal. Something always happens in the NFL. The offseason is just as intriguing as the regular season. The NFL offseason, just to be honest about it, is more intriguing than other sports' actual regular seasons. I used to think the opposite way. I used to get annoyed when ESPN would talk about the NFL offseason in the middle of June. Now I'm one of those people. I watch the NFL Network all the time because it really has. Like other sports, to me, it has become watered down to the point that they lack interest until the playoffs start. Baseball and basketball in particular, same thing with hockey. But football is just awesome all year round. The regular season, the postseason, the offseason, there's always something to talk about, and that's what, you know, that's why it dominates the majority of my podcast. That's why I feel like talking about the most is the NFL. So with all that being said, now we got the Rodgers situation out of the way, let's just go ahead and dive into this NFL draft. 2021 NFL Draft broadcasting live from Cleveland, Ohio this year. Last year, remember, it was a virtual NFL draft because of the pandemic. This year was more your traditional NFL draft. Fans inside the building, the analysts on site, the players on site back in the green room and everything. They were separated, of course, with respect to the CDC guidelines and everything. But there was more normalcy this year with the NFL draft. And if you listen to the, if you watch the NFL Network broadcast of the draft, Rich Eisen, who I respect and admire and look up to and I've always been a big fan of since I watched him as a kid on SportsCenter alongside the late, great Stuart Scott. Those two were typically a tandem doing SportsCenter together. But Rich Eisen made the point over and over and over again that this was a vaccinated crowd. Everyone on site in Cleveland had received some form of coronavirus vaccine. He made this point over and over again. It was one of those things, like, if you like to play drinking games, if you took a shot every time Rich Eisen said that the crowd, everyone in attendance was vaccinated, you would have had cirrhosis of the liver at some point. He made this point over and over again. If you're a degenerate gambler and you like to gamble on the amount of time someone says, or like, if you try to engage in NFL prop bets, I'm sure that might have been a prop bet somewhere. I would take the over because Rich Eisen made it a point of emphasis to belabor, to convey that point that everyone in Cleveland for the draft was vaccinated. I just thought that was interesting. I thought it was actually interesting might be the wrong word. I thought it was annoying, but I digress. But anyway, the NFL draft, Cleveland, Ohio this year, the first two picks were a chalk. It was standard. Everyone kind of knew what was coming with the first two picks. Jacksonville selected quarterback Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson University. This guy's been the preordained, pre-selected first pick in the NFL draft since he was 15 years old. He is a prototypical NFL quarterback. He's 6'6", about 215 pounds. If you were to build a quarterback from scratch, the finished product would be Trevor Lawrence. Big, strong kid, athletic, good arm, can beat you with his legs. If you don't believe me, ask Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl 2 years ago, in the 2020 Fiesta Bowl. The kid's got all the tools that you need. Like I said, the guy, from all the experts, all the analysts have said, this is the best prospect they've scouted, best quarterback prospect they've scouted since Andrew Luck and John Elway. So he's held up in that regard. He, like I said, since he was 15, he's been the first pick in the NFL draft. So that was no surprise to me. It'll be interesting to see how it works, though, in Jacksonville, because you have a first-year quarterback and a first-year head coach in Urban Meyer, two guys who've had tremendous success in college. Urban Meyer has never coached in the NFL level before. Now, Urban Meyer has won everywhere he's gone, whether it be Bowling Green or Florida or Ohio State. But my biggest concern about Urban Meyer is that if he loses one or two games in college, that sends him into an existential crisis. You know, he has an unexplained or unannounced health crisis or whatever going on with him. He has a heart attack if he loses one game. That's in college. So if Ohio State loses to Penn State or Michigan State or whoever, Urban Meyer is ready to commit suicide. He's ready to have, he's on the verge of a heart attack. What happens in the NFL? Because in the NFL, you're going to lose more than one game every year, especially with a team like Jacksonville that's really, in a lot of ways, you look at that roster, that's pretty much an expansion team. Their best players they have are all young guys, LaVisca Chenault and James Robinson, the star running back that they have. Those of you, Miles Jack on defense, all those guys are pretty young dudes. So like I said, Jacksonville in many ways resembles an expansion team roster. They're going to lose football games. It's inevitable. They're going to lose about this season, somewhere between 8 to 10 games at least. So how does Urban Meyer respond to losing on a weekly basis when he couldn't handle losing one game in one season in college? I understand that losing one game in college pretty much ruins your season for the most part. But in the NFL, coaching a team like Jacksonville, you're going to take your lumps. You're going to lose football games. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds to and handles that. I think Urban Meyer can have success in Jacksonville because he's had success everywhere he's gone, because the NFL has adopted college football concepts such as a spread offense, which he was pretty much the grandfather of. Going back to his days at Utah, he's had success running that type of offense, and I don't think it'll be too hard to implement that into what Jacksonville does, especially with an athletic, mobile quarterback like Lawrence, who you can really have some fun with and use your imagination as far as the offensive play calling is concerned to take advantage of his athletic skill set. So I'll definitely be keeping an eye on Jacksonville and see how they do this season. I definitely have a lot of interest in what happens with Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence, but that was the easy pick. Everyone saw that one coming. No surprise there. Same thing with the second pick. The New York Jets took my man Zach Wilson, from BYU, who ascended up the draft boards this season. He wasn't even on anyone's radar a year ago, but he had such a great 2020 and showed off his athletic skill set and what he can do as a quarterback, his ability to make throws from any angle, any launch point, multiple platforms, the reminding people on tape a little bit of Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. So the guy's gifted. The guy has a certain skill set that he can employ when he's on that football field. The Jets with the second pick had already traded Sam Darnold a few weeks ago to Carolina, so that cleared a path, easy path for Zach Wilson to be taken with the second pick. Now, what's interesting is I like what the Jets did later on in the first round. With the second pick, they traded Elijah Vera Tucker from USC. So you went out and got the best guard in the NFL draft. You put him on that same offensive line with Mekhi Becton. You're doing for Zach Wilson what you never did for Sam Darnold. Protect him. Put an offensive line in front of him. Help him out. Don't have your star rookie quarterback getting beaten up on a weekly basis and then wonder why this guy's struggling. I don't think Sam Darnold is the worst quarterback I ever seen. I think Sam Darnold had two things working against him: the Jets front office and the Jets head coach. Adam Gase was fucking terrible. I said that over and over again on the podcast during when I was recapping the NFL season last year. Adam Gase is awful. Adam Gase only existed in the NFL as a head coach for two reasons. Number one, he was the quote-unquote quarterback whisperer to Peyton Manning, as if Peyton Manning needed anyone like Adam Gase to help him be a better quarterback when they both spent time together in Denver. And Adam Gase, to me, was a beneficiary of NFL head coach white privilege. This is a guy who never won anything on any level. He didn't win in Miami, so of course, you don't win in Miami, so you get rewarded with a second job immediately after in New York, and you're terrible there. That's just what it is. To me, he was the beneficiary of privilege. So Sam Darnold had a lot working against him. Now, it's a new regime in New York. You got my man Robert Saleh, former defensive coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers. As I mentioned earlier, you got Mike LaFleur coming over, also coming over from San Francisco as a passing game coordinator, now the offensive coordinator with New York. Things to me are kind of falling into place for Zach Wilson, but it's still the Jets. I still wonder. I still worry. Is this kid going to be taken care of in order for him to have optimum success? Because I've always preached to people, I always spoke about this, the success of a young NFL draft pick, especially a quarterback, the success of a young quarterback hinges upon what team he goes to, what situation that team has, the culture that exists in the locker room, who do you have at the skill position players, do you have an offensive line in front of you, what type of offense are you going to, how well do you fit that offense? There's a lot of underlying factors that I think determine the success of an NFL football player, a young NFL football player, in particular a young NFL quarterback. I look at the offense that he's going to be running, how quarterback friendly it is. I like that part. I like the draft pick of Elijah Vera Tucker. I like how they're fortifying the offensive line. I think Zach Wilson's going to have a chance to be successful in New York, but it's still the Jets, so I'm still concerned. So Trevor Lawrence to the Jacksonville Jaguars with the first pick, Zach Wilson to the New York Jets with the second pick. The third pick in the NFL draft is when the 2021 NFL draft unofficially began. All the intrigue, all the surprise, all the conversation leading up to this pick, this was the most talked about aspect of the draft. And of course, this resonates with me and being a diehard, loyal, faithful San Francisco 49er fan. Much discussion about this out here in the California Bay Area, especially among some of the diehards who were Garoppolo fans, some of the people who wanted to draft Justin Fields with the third pick, and all the people who were just anti-Mac Jones on every single level. I'm not sure if I could even put it in the words accurately how much hate and vitriol there was out here in the Bay for Michael McCorkle Jones. How many 49er fans were ready to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge and commit mass suicide if the San Francisco 49ers had drafted Mac Jones, quarterback from the University of Alabama? I've been telling people for months now, I don't have a problem with Mac Jones. I even made a podcast about that. I think Mac Jones has a skill set that translates to the NFL. He reads defenses quickly. He has quick feet in the pocket. He can process information quickly. He can throw the ball in the tight windows. Everyone assumes that just because he played at Alabama and he's throwing to Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, and guys like that, that he's throwing to just wide open receivers on every play. No, when they play against upper echelon teams like Georgia, and you know Notre Dame in a college football semifinal game, you had guys that were covered. You had to throw in the tight windows. He showed he could do that. But everyone, I was in the minority on that. I was solely by myself, it felt like, in support of Mac Jones or just being at peace with that pick if it was the pick. I didn't have a problem with it. When I told people, when I look at Kyle Shanahan's track record of quarterbacks he's worked with and had success with, I look at Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, and Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub did have a couple of good years in Houston with Kyle Shanahan as offensive coordinator. But when I look at Kyle Shanahan's track record with the quarterbacks that he's worked with in the past and had success with, now you could talk about RG3 when Kyle was the OC with Washington in 2012 and RG3 was rookie of the year with Kyle Shanahan calling plays for a dual-threat, mobile, athletic quarterback like Robert Griffin III. He's shown he can work with different types of quarterbacks, but my point that I kept making to people was the quarterbacks he's predominantly worked with have a certain skill set and look a certain way that I thought that would influence the pick. I thought he would go in a direction that was conventional for him and picking Michael McCorkle Jones from Alabama. The quarterback that I wanted, the quarterback I was hoping we would take, was Trey Lance, and it doesn't happen very often. It's like every now and then all the stars align for me. Every so often, I actually get what I want, and with the third pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, my beloved San Francisco 49ers, America's team, selected quarterback Trey Lance from North Dakota State. I was overjoyed, elated. I was happier than a white girl at Starbucks. I was over the moon at this pick. This is exactly what I wanted. I knew that Lawrence and Wilson would be off the board already. And Trey Lance was the guy I identified. For me personally, my personal quarterback rankings, he was the third pick. He was the third best quarterback in my rankings. I had Wilson number one. I said that before in this podcast. Everyone knows I'm a big Zach Wilson fan. I think Wilson's better than Trevor Lawrence. But those two I knew would be off the board. So the third guy that I had, Lawrence was my number two, by the way. The third guy that I had was Trey Lance, and I was really hoping San Francisco would take him. Once that move was made on March 26th to trade two first-round draft picks to move up to the third pick, I was hoping, I had my fingers crossed, I had a rabbit's foot, I was wishing on a star, whatever, that the pick would be Trey Lance, that he would be the guy. A lot of people, like I said, a lot of Niner fans wanted Justin Fields. Truthfully, Fields wasn't even top five on my list. I got Kellen Mond being over Justin Fields. That's just me. But I was so happy that the pick was Lance because, you know, as I lamented about many times last season, San Francisco needs an update at the quarterback position. We needed a guy that could open up and expand the entire playbook. We need a guy that can put pressure on the defense every single play. Finally, the 49ers can play 11-on-11 football because finally we have a quarterback that constantly gives you a threat, either with his arms or with his legs. He is the quarterback of right now. He's the quarterback of the future. You're looking around the league, and all these teams that are winning and having success are doing so, for the most part, doing it with a young stud, dual-threat, athletic quarterback that can make plays with his arms and his legs, can make plays off schedule when everything breaks down. He can run out of the pocket. He can extend the play. He can pick up a first down on a third and eight with his legs. He can keep the chain moving. He can keep the offense on schedule. There's no question about Trey Lance's arm strength. He reminds a lot of people, myself included, of Josh Allen, who was also a quarterback that came from a small school, went to University of Wyoming. Wasn't really that talked about coming out of Wyoming. There was a lot of questions, a lot of doubts about him. He had a completion percentage in the 50s, so a lot of people were kind of low on Josh Allen. Well, you see how well Josh Allen played last season. In my estimation, he's a top five quarterback in the NFL. He received a lot of MVP votes, and he led Buffalo to the AFC title game. To me, Trey Lance is a carbon copy of Josh Allen, a reasonable facsimile of Josh Allen. I see a lot of similar traits. I see a rocket for an arm. I see a crazy amount of athleticism. I see the quarterback of right now, the quarterback of the future, and the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. This is a significant upgrade over what we currently have. He is the antithesis of Jimmy Garoppolo. Whereas Jimmy is flat-footed and immobile and unathletic, Trey Lance is fleet of foot, athletic, and decisive in everything he does on the football field. And the only questions about Trey Lance are, number one, is youth. He's 20 years of age, turns 21 in 7 days. His inexperience. He only started 17 games in college football, and he threw 318 pass attempts, which is the fewest amount of pass attempts for any first-round quarterback ever taken. The other two guys who are even closer to him on that list are Mark Sanchez and Michael Vick, who each had under 400 pass attempts in college in their own right. But Trey Lance, only 318 pass attempts, 20 years of age, and only started 17 games. Now, Mac Jones also started 17 games, as did Kyler Murray before he came out, before he went pro. So there is a precedent for this. But typically, you know, if you listen to people like Joel Klatt, who was doing analysis for the NFL Network, who also works for Fox Sports, does a tremendous job covering college football alongside Gus Johnson. Joel Klatt kept making that point over and over and over again about the lack of experience that Trey Lance had and the lack of starts and the lack of reps that he's had in college. He spoke about that being a major concern of his. Kurt Warner, who was working alongside Joel Klatt, made the point that Kurt Warner, he wasn't speaking in third person, but Kurt Warner said that in college in Northern Iowa, he only had about 11 or 13 starts in college, and he turned out pretty well, had a Hall of Fame career. So you don't know. I mean, Sam Darnold, I hate to bring him up again, but he had about 32 starts in college. Josh Rosen, I think, had about 33 or 34 starts in college. So you don't really know. You want to find like the happy medium between having a lot of experience coming into the NFL or being inexperienced. there's no exact science. I mean, the point that Klatt kept making was that the last 10 Super Bowl champion quarterbacks all had like well over at least 25 starts in college, had like 1,000 reps or whatever. They had a lot of experience coming into the NFL, and they were, you know, the last 10 Super Bowl champion quarterbacks. So I'm not sure how much that has to do with it. Most of that's Tom Brady, by the way. So take that stat with a grain of salt. I don't know. There's no only way we're going to tell is once he gets on the field and starts playing football. But once the guy was happy with the pick, and it presents quite the interesting situation for the 49ers. What happens to Jimmy Garoppolo? Do they trade him? Do they hold on to him? If he's on the roster past June 1st, you owe him about $25 million. Me personally, I would trade him because right now I think his value is the highest it's going to get. He's healthy right now. He's not injured. And you saw him struggle last year. But my biggest fear is that what happens if you hold on to Garoppolo in the roster and he goes in the preseason and gets hurt, or he starts and plays in the regular season and doesn't play very well? Now his value is gone. His value is diminished. So now you're kind of just stuck with him. I mean, he signed on the roster through 2022. But for me, if I'm looking to get value for this dude, I know he's not my long-term quarterback, I would trade him. Now, the rebuttal to that would be, well, you can't start Trey Lance day one because he's raw, he's an unfinished product, he's not ready to go from day one. I think all that's bullshit. I think when people make that point about football players being raw and not ready to play, it's typically about black players. You never hear that about white players, number one, first and foremost. But to me, once again, it goes back to what I always say, the coaching, the culture that you walk into the team. Any quarterback the 49ers drafted at number three, I thought was going to be successful. That's why I wasn't so anti-Matt Jones, because I just believe in what I say. The team is ready-made to go compete for a championship. The team is 2 years removed from being in the Super Bowl. They were 7 minutes away from winning a championship. This is a stacked roster on both sides of the football. This is a playoff-ready team, if not a Super Bowl-ready team, as is. The only thing missing is a quarterback. So I look at the people that we already have in place. I look at the coaching that we have. I look at the culture that we have. And that, to me, tells me that I don't think it really matters. It matters, but I don't think in regards to whatever rookie quarterback they were going to take this year, I thought any of them could have had success playing in San Francisco. It could have been Justin Fields. It could have been Trey Lance. Could have been Mac Jones. Could have been Kellen Mond in the later rounds. Kyle Trask. I truly believe that. I don't think it really truly mattered 100%. Now, with Lance and Fields, you, like I said, you open up the entire playbook. Now, Kyle Shanahan can really use his imagination and come up with some creative and fun plays. Now, that jet sweep with Deebo Samuel really becomes a dicey situation for the defense. Now, you can implement more of those college football concepts into the offense. Now, the 49ers can run RPO and just have opposing defenses in complete disarray, because with Lance's ability to run the football, you have to respect whether or not he's going to try to keep it and take off himself, or if he's going to just hand it off to Raheem Mostert or Jeff Wilson. So the possibilities are endless. I mean, like I said, this opens up the entire playbook, having a guy like Lance on the field and being able to utilize his skill set. As a 49er fan, I can't wait. I mean, is it football season yet? Can we just kick this thing off already and get the 2021 season started? I mean, we haven't even finished the rest of the draft yet, but just having Trey Lance on the team with the people we already have, I'm psyched about this. I can't possibly be happier right now. Just having a guy like Trey Lance in the fold, and his unique skill set and his athleticism and what he brings to the team, and Kyle Shanahan's creativity and offensive play calling, this is going to be awesome. Whether Garoppolo stays or goes remains to be seen. Like I said, I would deal him because I'm just afraid he's going to get hurt again or play like shit and diminish his trade value. The counter to that is you want to keep him to try to develop Lance and let Lance sit for a year and learn behind Garoppolo. And Garoppolo is a proven quarterback. When he is healthy, when he can figure out a way to stay on the field. San Francisco did go 13-3 2 years ago and got to the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo as a quarterback. Not because, but they got there with him. There's a difference. There's a huge distinction between the two. Because so many 49er fans try to tell the story in a way that I feel like is inauthentic. We got to the Super Bowl with Garoppolo. We didn't get there because of Garoppolo. And that's the difference. And that's, you know, you think back to Super Bowl 54, you think about some of the things Mahomes was able to do in the fourth quarter, being able to extend plays, being able to, you know, waste a little bit of time for someone to get open and then keep the drive going or hit somebody for a touchdown or whatever. Mahomes is exactly what I'm talking about. He's a quarterback of right now. He's the quarterback of the future. He's an athletic quarterback that can make plays with his arms and his legs. And you got to believe that Kyle Shanahan was sitting on the sideline looking at Patrick Mahomes, thinking to himself, I need one of those guys because my guy can't do none of that shit. And I said this before in a podcast last season, recapping the Bills 49er Monday Night Football game. You had to believe that Kyle Shanahan was standing on the sideline as Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills were beating the dog shit out of the 49ers, beating earth, wind, fire, and ice out of San Francisco. You had to believe that Kyle Shanahan was looking at Josh Allen and saying to himself, I need something like that on my team. I need a guy like that running my offense. I need a guy with that skill set, with that much athleticism, with that throwing ability, with that much natural talent, with someone who can just do things once the play breaks down, that can do things outside the architecture and structure of the offense. You need a guy like that on your team. You can look at Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. You can say, well, Tom Brady can't do none of that shit. Well, he's Tom Brady. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. You're not going to have that on your team. We tried to get him a year ago. They should have gotten him, but that's another story for a different day. But not every team is blessed to have the greatest quarterback in pro football history on their team. Once again, you look around the current landscape of the NFL. Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray. You need a guy like that on your team. Aaron Rodgers is athletic, even at his age, in his late 30s. He's athletic. He can move out the pocket. He can extend plays. He can pick up first downs with his legs. You need a guy like that on your team. Opposing teams' edge rushers are too good. Opposing teams' defenses are too fast in general to just have a traditional pocket quarterback and think you can always get away with it. He better be really good. He better be able to quickly process information and get the ball out of his hands and go to the right receiver almost every single time, the same way Tom Brady can. And even Tom Brady makes mistakes. You know, Brady had a stretch of the season last year where he wasn't playing good football. He had a stretch of the season last year where he looked 43, where he looked like an old quarterback who couldn't get out the way. Well, you better have an extraordinary offensive line, which, quite frankly, the 49ers don't have. We have Trent Williams and a bunch of other dudes. So with the offensive line being in the state that it is right now, especially with Mike McGlinchey at right tackle, you better have a quarterback that can move and figure some things out once the play breaks down. And that's who Trey Lance is, and that's what Trey Lance represents. And once again, I couldn't possibly be any happier with the pick. So San Francisco taking Trey Lance at 3 is good with me. Trey to the Bay, Trey area, whatever you want to call it. Welcome to the Bay Area. Welcome to the family of Trey Lance. Awesome draft pick by the 49ers. Trey Lance was the third quarterback taken in this draft behind Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. The fourth quarterback taken was Justin Fields. The Chicago Bears moved up to the 11th pick. They traded up to that pick to take Justin Fields. That was a big deal. A lot of people, I don't think anyone really saw that one coming. But and the Bears had to do something. I mean, they tried to get Russell Wilson there, or there was talk about them getting Russell Wilson in the offseason. They didn't come to fruition. They instead had to settle for the worst consolation prize of all time in Andy Dalton. A lot of Bears fans, of course, are upset about that. You know, GM Ryan Pace and coach Matt Nagy, their job was on the line. They had to do something substantial to try to sustain themselves and keep themselves around in Chicago and stay employed. Andy Dalton is probably not going to help you out with that. Justin Fields, another guy that has a great skill set, dual threat, athletic quarterback, has some issues. I don't like his throwing motion. I don't like the way his elbow flares out when he throws the football. I don't like the inaccuracy that he has on short to intermediate throws. Got a great arm. He can make every throw, but I worry, can he make every throw accurately? But, you know, I think it's a good pick for Chicago because, as I've said so many times on this podcast, this is a team that hasn't had a quarterback since Sid Luckman in the 1940s. They've been absolutely embarrassing in that position for about 70 or 80 years. So Justin Fields doesn't have a high bar to jump over. He doesn't have a lot to live up to. If he could just come in and be decent and be serviceable, Chicago can do some things, and he'll probably sit for a little bit behind Andy Dalton. And inevitably, when Andy Dalton struggles in about week 5 or week 6, Bears fans are going to start, you know, being very vocal and letting their voices be known, probably boo Dalton off the field and be calling in the radio stations talking shit about Nagy and Pace and clamoring and requesting that Justin Fields get on the field and play. So I look for Justin Fields to play football for the Bears somewhere around midseason. And I wish him all the best. You know, he's a black quarterback, so I always try to be optimistic about black quarterbacks and root for them and hope for their success. You know, like I said, Fields is not my personal top five, but I do think he's a talented, good quarterback with unlimited potential if he's coached the right way. So I do worry about that in Chicago because we all saw what happened to Trubisky. I worry about the lack of talent at the skill positions. Now, you have Allen Robinson you can throw to, but not much else. We'll see what Chicago does in the draft going forward to try to put some more people around Fields and or Andy Dalton. So I think it's a good pick for Chicago. Michael McCorkle Jones, Mac Jones, was taken 16th, to the New England Patriots. I knew that pick was coming. Once Fields was off the board, and with the following picks after 11, I knew Mac was going 15 to the Patriots because he just fits what they like to do. And then you have also got to take into consideration that Nick Saban, Bill Belichick connection. These two worked together in Cleveland back in 95. Belichick was the head coach. Nick Saban was his defensive coordinator. These guys go way back. They're good friends. Bill Belichick has selected 11 players from Alabama who were coached by Nick Saban. That's more than any other coach in the league. So, like I said, with those two guys being so close and so cool with each other, and Belichick having so much trust for Saban, and with Mac Jones fitting what New England likes to do as far as timing and precision and rhythm in the offense, and being able to run the similar offense that Tom Brady ran when he was in New England, because New England had to adjust their play calling and their offense to accommodate Cam Newton, because Cam Newton has a different skill set. But truthfully, I think what they prefer to do is have a traditional drop-back pocket quarterback, and that's what Mac Jones is, and that's what Cam Newton isn't. So they gave Cam a one-year deal for $13 million. I think he'll get that 1 year, and then Mac Jones will take over and be the quarterback of the future for the New England Patriots. So like I said, I knew that pick was coming. The rest of the first round, for the most part, was standard issue. Not too many surprises. A lot of people were kind of miffed that Cincinnati took Ja'Marr Chase, number 5, and didn't take Penei Sewell, offensive tackle out of Oregon, to protect Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is walking around with an 8-inch scar on his left knee because he had his left knee decimated last year in a game against the Washington football team, and he got beaten up many times before that due to Cincinnati's abysmal offensive line. So a lot of people were looking for Cincinnati to take a lineman at 5. I'm not upset about that pick. Ja'Marr Chase is the best receiver in this draft. He has prior history with Joe Burrow. He was a receiver for that 2019 LSU National Championship team with Joe Burrow, a quarterback. So with the prior history both those guys have and with the amount of talent at the offensive line throughout this entire draft, a lot of good guards, a lot of good tackles throughout this draft. They can get someone like Samuel Cosmi, left tackle from the University of Texas in the second round. You can get a guy like Dylan Raidens, who was a tackle at North Dakota State. There's an abundance of talent in this draft on the offensive line. So I'm not really too upset that Cincinnati didn't take a lineman at 5. I wasn't surprised about Atlanta taking Kyle Pitts at 4. And Kyle Pitts is the highest graded player in this draft other than Trevor Lawrence. An 84-inch wingspan. He's a tight end who can line up at receiver. He can play any position. He can be the X. He can be the Y. He's a matchup nightmare. Safeties are not fast enough to stay with him or not big enough. DBs aren't big enough. Linebackers aren't fast enough. I mean, the guys is a matchup nightmare. You put him out there with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, that Falcons offense is going to be electric. Matt Ryan still playing good football, 35, 36 years of age. There was some talk about Atlanta potentially taking a quarterback to replace Matt Ryan eventually. They decided to go Kyle Pitts to give Matt Ryan another weapon. Not too mad about that, although I probably would have gone defense if I was in Atlanta because they were ranked 29th last year. But, you know, Kyle Pitts is going to be a great football player in the NFL, so I'm not too mad about that. You had Jalen Waddle going to the Miami Dolphins to give Tua Tagovailoa another weapon, also reuniting both of them. That seemed to be a trend throughout this draft because you had Jacksonville's second pick in the first round was Travis Etienne, running back out of Clemson, who, of course, was college teammates with Trevor Lawrence. You had Miami taking Jalen Waddle, who once upon a time was teammates with Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama. And you also had LSU being represented by the Cincinnati Bengals with the fifth pick, like I just said, with them taking Ja'Marr Chase, who was teammates at LSU with Joe Burrow. So you think about the last three national champions, last four, really, national champions in college football. It's been run by LSU, Alabama, and Clemson. They've been the last couple national champions, and they were well represented in this NFL draft. Like I said, you had two guys from Clemson and Lawrence and NTN going. You had Ja'Marr Chase going from LSU. And then you add six guys from the University of Alabama going in the first round. Six guys from one team went in the first round of the NFL draft. Salute to Nick Saban for what he's built down there in Tuscaloosa. That is incredible. This is the yearly dominance this team has, the way they own college football. Either they win a national championship or you have to beat them along the way to get to a national championship yourself. Like LSU had to beat Alabama at some point to get themselves in a position to go win a national championship. Clemson, the two times they won a national championship, had to beat Alabama to do it. They are the preeminent, dominant force in college football. There's just no argument that could be against that. I don't care. You can be the biggest Auburn fan in the world. You can hate Alabama. You can just loathe and despise the Crimson Tide and Nick Saban and everything they represent. If you're being honest and truthful with yourself, you have to acknowledge that Alabama has owned and dominated college football for the past 11 years or however long Nick Saban's been there. It is impressive. It is incredible. It is amazing. Six guys from the University of Alabama taken in the first round of the NFL draft. The only two things that really surprised me in this draft, number one was Dallas and Philadelphia trading with each other. Philadelphia moved up to number 10 to take Devontae Smith, another Alabama guy, bringing him into the fold, giving Jalen Hurts, another Alabama guy slash Oklahoma, another weapon to throw to. And Dallas took Micah Parsons, a Penn State linebacker. That caught my eye, caught a lot of people's eye, because typically in the draft, or typically in general, you don't see two teams in the same division trade amongst each other, amongst themselves. That's rare. You don't often see that, because now Micah Parsons and Devontae Smith are going to be forever linked together because one team could have had the other or vice versa. Dallas came into this draft desperately needing defense. That defense last year was historically bad. It was awful. Sean Lee just retired 2 days ago, as a matter of fact. So they had a hole in linebacker. Now you go out and take Micah Parsons, who, in a lot of people's opinion, myself included, was the best linebacker in this draft. He's an awesome football player, can make plays on every single level, do everything a linebacker needs to do, a physical freak of nature. Micah Parsons is awesome. You pair him alongside Leighton Vander Esch and my man Jalen Smith from Notre Dame, now Dallas's defense can go in the right direction. But that just caught my eye, seeing two teams in the same division trade with each other. I've never seen that before. The second thing caught my eye, this is probably the biggest head-scratcher in the first round, was the Las Vegas Raiders taking another Alabama guy, Alex Leatherwood, offensive lineman in the first round. The Raiders were another team that I thought sorely needed defense. They really had a lot of holes in their defense last year. They have no pass rush whatsoever. The secondary is awful. On all three levels of defense, the Raiders are terrible. They fired their defensive coordinator, Paul Gunther, last season, late in the year. The offense was good in Vegas. It was the defense that kept them from making the playoffs. So I was really of the mindset, I think a lot of people were of the mindset, that the Raiders were going to walk into this draft and take somebody on defense, whether that be Jeremiah Owusu-Kamara from Notre Dame, who's still on the board, still available, whether it be Greg Newsome, who ended up going to the Cleveland Browns. Jalen Phillips was the very next pick after Leatherwood, defensive end, arguably the best defensive end in this draft. He was taken by Miami. Jamin Davis was a linebacker taken by Kentucky. Quiddy Pay, another great edge rusher out of Michigan, went to Indianapolis. Caleb Farley was a 22nd pick to Virginia Tech, another great defensive back. Gregory Russo, Jason Owe, Joe Tryon, those were the last three picks of the first round. Eric Stokes, who went to Green Bay, I'll get to that in a second. You had other great defensive players still available in this draft for a team that desperately needed defense, and they reached on a guy like Leatherwood who wasn't on anyone's draft board in the first round. Daniel Jeremiah said it during the broadcast for NFL Network. He had Leatherwood evaluated as the 62nd best player in the draft, and the Raiders took him in the top 20. It's things like that that's why the Raiders are the Raiders. You think back to a couple years ago when Mike Mayock first took over as the GM of the Raiders and came in alongside John Gruden. And the first draft they had, he took Cleveland Farrell out of Clemson. He hasn't worked out. Jonathan Abram out of Mississippi State. He's been often injured and really hasn't been that good when he's been on the field. Other than Josh Jacobs and Hunter Renfro, the Raiders have not hit in the draft in the Mayock-Gruden era. The jury's still out on Henry Ruggs, receiver from Alabama, who was taken last year with the 12th pick. But he had an up-and-down, kind of inconsistent, underwhelming year in his rookie season for the Raiders. The jury's still out. Like I said, they haven't made the playoffs yet. They've been together for 3 years. This Mayock Gruden administration that took over with the Raiders, this new regime that took over that was supposed to lead the Raiders back to respectability, back to prominence, and they haven't made the playoffs yet. They've collapsed and folded in the second half of the season in consecutive years. Derek Carr is a decent, serviceable quarterback. I think he's top 15. I don't mind Derek Carr. You have Darren Waller at tight end, one of the top three tight ends in the league. Now, the Raiders did lose some pieces from their offensive line in free agency. You talk about Rodney Hudson going to the Arizona Cardinals. Gabe Jackson went to Seattle. Right tackle Trent Brown went to the New England Patriots. So they lost some pieces on their offensive line. So I can understand why they would try to replenish their offensive line by taking a tackle in this draft. I just don't understand why they took that particular tackle at that particular pick when he wasn't evaluated by anybody's draft board to be a first-round pick, much less a top 20 pick. And like I said earlier, there's plenty of value in this draft on the offensive line. There's a lot of guys, a lot of tackles, a lot of guards that are available that you can get good players with in the later round, the second, third, fourth, and fifth rounds. So I just didn't understand the pick. For a team that desperately needed defense and you had defensive playmakers still on the board and you decided to go out and get an offensive lineman who wasn't evaluated to be in the first round, it's a head-scratcher. I don't get it. Mike Mayock knows a lot about football. I respect the hell out of Mike Mayock for his level of football acumen. I assume he knows what he's doing, but based on the draft picks that he's already had, I have my doubts. So let's bring it back to the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to talk about their pick. Greg Stokes, defensive back from the University of Georgia. As I alluded to earlier, Aaron Rodgers is highly upset, mad as a motherfucker with the Green Bay Packers front office. He's looking for more weapons. He's looking for someone opposite Devontae Adams. He's looking for help to try to get the Green Bay Packers over the hump. He's looking for his team to finally draft an offensive player in the first round at one of the skill positions, either a running back or preferably a receiver. He wants some help. So the Green Bay Packers, on the same day that Aaron Rodgers demands to be traded, go out and draft a defensive back. A good defensive back. I like Eric Stokes. I like his teammate at Georgia, Tyson Campbell, a little bit better. So that was another one that kind of confused me to see Stokes go in the first round. I thought Campbell would go ahead of him, but whatever. But you take this DB in the first round, the same day that Rodgers is pissed off and demanding a trade. I just thought that was the Green Bay Packers front office way of saying, fuck you, Aaron. We're in control. We're in charge here. You're just a player. You do what we tell you to do. And that's not going to make Aaron Rodgers happy. I don't think he's going to be doing cartwheels in Green Bay because it took Eric Stokes. No disrespect to Eric Stokes. Like I said, a good young football player. I think that pick was made because Kevin King got his lunch money taken in the NFC title game versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was awful in that game. Brady just identified wherever Kevin King was at and threw it in his direction because he couldn't stop it. It was either a completion or a pass interference penalty. Either way, something positive happened for the Buccaneers and something negative happened for the Green Bay Packers whenever Kevin King was on the field and the ball was going in his direction. So that's why this pick was made, because Kevin King stunk up the joint in the NFC Championship game. But I just don't, from Aaron Rodgers' perspective, I don't think he's going to be very happy with that pick. I just don't think he's going to be overjoyed and elated with the selection of Eric Stokes, defensive back out of the University of Georgia. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Baltimore took Rashad Bateman, who was one of the many very talented receivers in this draft. This is, like, to me, the third year in a row where we had a very rich wide receiver draft. You look in the first 10 picks, you had three receivers go. You had Devontae Smith go at 10. You had Jalen Waddle go at 7 to Philadelphia. And you had Jamar Chase go number 5 to Cincinnati. Bateman went to the Baltimore Ravens, which makes 4 receivers taken in the first round. Once again, I'm sure Aaron Rodgers was watching, thinking to himself, why couldn't we take Elijah Moore out of Mississippi? Why couldn't we take Rondale Moore from Purdue? Anybody but a defensive back, but I digress. Baltimore took Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. Great route runner, great hands, physical with the line of scrimmage, can beat man, press coverage. A good pick. Baltimore is one of those teams that they know what they're doing every year in the draft. I'll never question any draft pick the Baltimore Ravens make. That's a team that knocks it out the ballpark every year. I wish we had whoever is in their front office making picks come work for San Francisco so we can always knock it out the ballpark every year, because the Ravens get it right every year in the draft. So salute to them for doing their due diligence and their homework on these players and doing their great scouting, for getting it right every year. It's amazing the way to watch the way that Baltimore works. So I'm sure Rashad Bateman is going to be a great player. Everyone knew Baltimore was going receiver. They need help with that position. Lamar Jackson needs other weapons to throw to. He needs to develop as a quarterback in his own right, but it would help him out if he had more skilled players to throw the football to and play with. So I knew it was going to be a receiver. I didn't know it would be Rashad Bateman, but I knew it was going to be a receiver for Baltimore. So great pick by them. Once again, not going to question the Baltimore Ravens or anything they do on draft day. And that pretty much wraps it up for the first round. I mean, everything else was standard issue. Pittsburgh took Najee Harris, same thing. And Pittsburgh had a terrible running game last year. They needed a running back. Najee Harris and Travis Etienne were the two best running backs in this draft. Pittsburgh at 24 took a running back. That makes perfect sense. Take some of the pressure off Roethlisberger. So Ben, at this point in his career, should not be throwing it 40 times a game like he was last year. A good running back will take some of that pressure off his shoulders. Great pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Great first round NFL draft, officially in the books. As awesome as I thought it would be, I took off work for this shit because fuck work. The NFL draft is paramount, front and center, first and foremost on my thoughts and in my mind. I couldn't wait for this draft. I can't wait for day two, Friday night, and the subsequent rounds three through seven on Saturday. The draft is awesome. The draft is amazing. Football is awesome. Football is amazing. You are awesome. You are amazing for listening to the Deion Gordon podcast. Always humble, very appreciative, grateful eternally for every single person that listens to this podcast. This concludes this edition of the Deion Gordon podcast. Picture me rolling. I'm out.